what we're seeing real? Does it matter? Did it ever? Find out on Haunted MTL's High Art Camp with contributors Parzival, J.M. Brannick, and a special guest.
Hello, welcome to High Art Camp. This is the podcast that is the end-all be-all if a movie can indeed call itself art. I am your host and highly awarded art critic, J.M. Brannick, a.k.a. Box Human, with my other host and highly awarded art critic, Parzival. Wave to the people, Bars.
Hi.
We are two mega giants at the top of our game, coming to your inexperienced baby ears to settle once and for all, is this art? Joining us today is guest mega superstar critic Court.
Hello.
Hi. She comes with the skills and background in English literature, criminal justice, with the interests in dystopians, slashers, and folk horrors. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, welcome to the show part two.
Yeah. Right back at it again.
Right back at it. Full swings. Okay, so this is our two-part of three-part that is an episode that was chosen by Pars, which is 2001's Bully. So if you haven't heard the first part, I would highly suggest you go listen to it because this is not going to make any sense if you just come in this, like, right now. I mean, like, you could, but it's not going to make any sense. But if that's your flavor, that's fine, too. But in the past, we were kind of talking about it. We had to hurry up because our meeting time ended, unfortunately. So we are here to discuss it more in length, kind of talk about it, you know, squeeze it, pull it, push it, everything that you do with a bop it, and kind of get into it. Do you want to tell us again why you chose this movie? I know you explained it a little bit last time, but just to catch everybody up.
Yeah, so I chose Bully because I watched it. My husband told me to watch it. We watched it. I wasn't quite sure if I thought it was up there as far as my favorite director, Lars von Trier, or if it was completely the opposite. So
yeah, sometimes
I ended up Yeah,
sometimes it's hard to distinguish when you have strong feelings. It's hard to sometimes distinguish what exactly. Yeah, so I understand that.
Yeah, and so I ended up deciding that I thought it was a masterpiece. And then now I've watched it 9 times. But
oh my God.
Wait, 9 times?
9 times.
Oh my God.
You are an expert in Bully.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so my thing is that literature will always be king, but film is getting close to blurring the lines, you know, between the two arts. So we see this in films like von Trier's or certain French and Spanish films. America's kind of take on this blur, I feel, is coming from Larry Clark. His creations, his biographical photos, to acclaim films like Kids and Bully. They're not for everyone, but like many wildly artistic creators, their pieces are often misunderstood and misrepresented. I want to add that in this instance, the book is for sure something I would recommend investing in, because I did read that between episodes. And Larry Clark's adaptation is a rendition worth the eyes of anyone studying film, sociology, American history, or Are White with Kids.
And that's the name of the book?
Bully, A True Story of High School Revenge by Jim Schutz.
Okay.
S-C-H-U-T-Z-E.
Okay, and that was the actual story that this movie takes the inspiration and the facts from.
Yeah, and the writer of the book did help in the screenwriting of Bully, the movie.
Okay. So you dove super into it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have a lot to talk about. I know at the end of last week, I there was so much that I wanted to talk about. I kind of just vomited it out all over. So I want to hear some of, because you said that he did get, I know, especially about the sexuality, he got a lot of shit for that. I had a few criticisms too. Let's kind of pull that apart. What is the difference between the book and the movie?
Well, there's differences when it comes to just the mode of storytelling. So some scenes in the book get smushed into one scene in the film. It's for, you know, for sake of time, for sake of telling somebody a story visually. Now, the book has more information. It goes further into sexual actions of these young adults. And it's from the actual verbiage used in the book to the film, in many places is exactly the same or very similar.
What's an example of that?
Yeah. Let me find.
That was one of the things that I thought was really distracting, was the dialogue of the characters.
Okay. Was distracting.
Yeah. I felt like it was kind of, where are my notes? I thought like it was just, where is it? Damn. It was kind of awkward. Like, especially, and I'm sorry, I forget all of their names except for Marty and Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
But like when they were gonna, it was girl who was tweaking that guy's nipples, and she's like,
Allie?
Yep, that's it, Allie. Yep. And she's like, we're gonna kill this guy, and he like, kill him, and he's like, yeah, kill him, and she's like, yeah, kill him, and he's like, no, and she's like, yeah, and he's like, no, and he's
okay,
like,
Donnie,
heavy shit.
Yeah,
and that whole scene, I was like, oh, okay.
I'm trying to find Donnie here. Yeah.
And just like, also like when they were, oh my God, you turned me into baby. That's
the Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, here's
okay.
One. On page 9 here, Allie, talking about Allie. You're an asshole, she said. Ooh, baby, Bobby said. You know what I like. Remember that in the car?
No.
Was that after the deli?
Oh.
When they had like the whole group orgy kind of thing? Okay.
Okay. I think I do remember that now. Do we know how reliable these narrators are?
No, we don't. This is put forward as a true crime book. This is written by Jim Schutz, has been nominated for 2 Edgar Awards. He's the author of By 2 and 2, Preacher's Girl. The Dallas Bureau Chief of the Houston Chronicle has been an investigative reporter for the Detroit Free Press and Dallas Times Herald. So he's a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
Yeah, I'm not saying that he's not credible. I'm just saying...
Okay.
They're kids. And if he's asking them, well, what did you say? I mean, kids can say anything.
Well, I'm assuming he's put this together from multiple accounts, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure certain things aren't accurate, but, I mean, that's just part of relaying a story.
Yeah, especially a true story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to embellish some stuff sometimes, I guess. With like, yeah.
Here, let me read you the opener to this, because this, the author uses a lot of, let me just, the wall above Lisa's bed was a shrine to yearning. Pictures of fantastic studs and G-strings with their chests and haunches greased and flexed languished next to glossy photographs of gorgeous, wet-lipped women in everything from fashion magazine poses to soft porn stretches. These Olympian men and women steamed up the wall above her bed in a crazy jumble, and above them she taped a headline cut from a newspaper that said, "What Women Want." Lisa spent hours here, naked on this bed. And then further goes, the thing she wanted was a boy. She had never had a boyfriend, never a date, never a boy who even teased her at school. She felt fat and ugly. When she lay on the bed and looked up at her pictures, she imagined what it would be like to have a boy lover and make her completely happy all the time. Once in a while, she shyly told her mother how she felt, but mainly she kept it all to herself. It was her secret religion, lying here and looking up, dreaming and wanting, waiting for someone to for something to come true.
And now, what page was that from?
The very first page.
Okay.
I've got page numbers here. I've got a bunch of where the author used sort of like I thought Clark did just via film with the camera shots. So the pages with sexualization of these young people by the author. Here, let's go to page 4.
I never got that insecurity from her, though. Maybe shyness, yes, but never like I never felt like she thought she was fat or imperfect.
Yeah, just I only got that a little bit in the very, very beginning, but after that it was gone, and it wasn't that she was fat. You're right.
Well, and it's not that, I mean, you know, that's the age-old thing. We look in the mirror, we always see the things that we hate that most about us, you know, but I didn't feel that with her.
Right.
It wasn't TLC's Unpretty.
Right.
I mean, that's a crazy extreme example.
Here on page 4, it was easy for Allie. She was small, had perfect legs, and an ass and breasts straight from a fashion magazine. Her very cute face was set off by twinkling blue-green eyes. She had an ideal beach body. On top of that, her hair was great. Lisa's dull red mane always felt lumpy and oily, no matter what she did with it. So that's a writer doing what Clark did with his camera shots.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree to a point, yeah, that like when you first see them in that grocery store, that's kind of the image of Allie is the more sexual one, the more comfortable in her skin, I guess. But then they're all starting to fuck later. I don't know.
Yeah.
Court, you are quiet. come into this conversation.
Soak it all in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now spit it all out.
Are we just like kind of still going off?
Well, this? Honestly, do you have more pars with that in theme? Because I think that's a pretty solid case by case that you showed. Because I feel like the director did take that. Mm-hmm. I think that the director is known for that, so I don't think that was too out of his wheelhouse.
Yes, yes.
I could see him looking at that and going, oh yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I feel like that's a solid point.
And there's a documentary on YouTube. I didn't write the name down of it, but I will find it. And he, quoting him in there, he says he's never a writer. He was never a writer. He saw stories and he had a camera in his hand. Mm-hmm. So like he knows he can't, he doesn't have the know-how, the skill to write a story. So where his art comes in would be, you know, the pictures, the gaining of imagery and images.
Okay. So we can't blame all the bad dialogue on him, I guess.
We got to blame somebody.
I liked the dialogue. I liked it.
I didn't.
That's because I've heard that stuff. I've heard like exact things that they said. I've heard people say at that age. It was nuts to me.
There were like some parts of the dialogue that I liked, like when Donnie was pretending to be that, I think her name was Lizzie or Izzy, the girl with the blue hair. He was pretending to be her girlfriend, and he was
Heather?
Like rehearsing. Yeah, Heather.
That's the only person that I remember.
This right. Like sounds a lot like Izzy, okay?
Yeah, Heather, yes. Heather Izzy.
But I like that part when he was just kind of like prepping what to say to Bobby, and he kept just, I don't know, I found that part funny because he was just being like an idiot.
Well, that part was endearing.
Yeah.
And I think we need to, I think, more of that.
Yeah, because it was like, okay, I get that. I don't know. It was just like kind of like comedic relief, and it would have been a little bit nice to have a little bit more of that.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
I felt the only time that, and that was a good moment, I felt the only time that I felt really engaged with somebody talking was when Marty was talking about the first time he was getting high. And honestly, I think it was props to the actor playing him, Brad Renfro, RIP, because again, the words themselves were like, eh, but the way that he did emote it was like extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was like, I think one of the only times throughout the whole movie that I was like, oh, I'm connecting with this character. This is a human that has human things happening to them. Whereas the rest of the time, it's like, I just did not feel any engagement.
Was it the same way for you with Kids?
Kids, I had seen so, so long ago.
Okay.
I had seen it as a teenager, and I remember also feeling like very disconnected to it. Very. Okay. I know you and I, because we chat, folks. We chat off podcasting. We do live and survive and breathe off the podcasts. We're not AIs, just on podcasting. I swear, wink. Pars and I had kind of talked about this too, about identity. And for me, I, as a teenager, could not identify as any of these stereotypes. And when I would see things like this as I was growing up, as I was a teenager, watching teens like this, teens that were supposed to portray teens like me, I would get very angry and very frustrated because I was very, very different from that. And the people that I knew were very different from that. And it was almost kind of like a pressure of, this is how you're supposed to be. And if you are not this, then there is something that is wrong with you, because you're supposed to be cool and you're supposed to be into drugs and you're supposed to be into fucking and, you know, all this cool stuff that cool teens do. And I'm like, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I want to watch Daria, you know? And then, of course, that was always what the media would fixate on, what parents would fixate on, is these type of movies that it's like, oh, this is what your generation is into. And it's like, but no.
Okay. I see. I understand.
So I think that also happened with Kids, but I think also it had Chloe Sevigny, who is very beautiful. It is hard to say mad.
She is, yes.
At Chloe Sevigny. If she were in this movie, I think I would still not like it, but I would be okay with at least watching her. She's a great actress. Anyway.
So there's an example of how this film can be harmful.
Do tell.
The experience that you've had, because yes, there were kids like this. Yes, this did happen, but that does not make up everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this story and we can learn from this story, but we need more stories. I wrote down a quote. Where's that quote? It was by Toni Morrison. There it is. If there's a book that you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal writer.
I feel bad quoting her because I've never read her. I've got The Bluest Eye sitting right next to me.
Yes. love that one. Go read it, Pars.
Yeah. It's not horror. I don't know how we can figure out how to associate it with horror.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everything's horror, right?
Right.
Yeah. Everything's
life is horror.
Right. Exactly. But yes, however, during this time period, there was a huge, huge push for movies that were, again, white, suburban kids doing white kid shit, heteronormative shit, even if it's going on the cusp of gay, such as this movie, because there's usually a cusp of queerness in there. But it's usually pejoratively done, or it's an aside. And especially, there's not a lot of, besides like Spike Lee during this time, there wasn't a lot of voices. You're correct. 100% correct. And that's partly of why these type of movies are frustrating, I think, because it is that gooey little geode time capsule of this era where it's just privileged white kids getting into trouble, even though they got jobs, they have cars, they got houses, they have a family that loves them, who's willing to take them to piano fucking lessons, you know, and willing to talk to them naked. I still...
Yeah.
But still, all of that, and they're still like, I don't like life. Let's do drugs. Let's listen to hip hop. Let's take their culture. You know, like, it's frustrating because there's that absence, that absolute absence. So I think that's part of the frustration of that. I think it's exploiting that.
Okay.
And it's not just this director, and it's not just this film. Reality Bites was like this. That's not a horror film, though. But, you know, there were a lot of films that were like that during this time where it's just like, oh, I'm restless.
Okay.
I'm white. Nobody understands me. I have all these things, but I'm still sad.
Well, let me go on a limb here.
Sure.
In the book, there is a lot more on this gay happenings. I'm sorry, I'm not doing good with words.
The gay happening. I would watch the shit out of that movie. It's like The Happening, but
gay.
Marty and Bobby in the book had started making. Okay, so they started a while ago bullying, pushing around, picking on, and hurting mentally challenged people. Mm. As they got older, they started introducing sexual behaviors into their punishments of people. So they would go to the gay bars, which we saw in the film just for a minute. But what they ended up doing was finding a guy and they shot him doing things on camera. And Marty ended up taking money from this guy for interacting with phone sex. And he would do it a few times a week. And he kept up with this for a while. So I'm assuming that's who Marty was on the phone with in the beginning of the film. But once again, we don't know.
Yeah, they never tell us.
So there's where there's a hint, but there's an area where Clark could have pushed. He could have included that in the film, but didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a lot going on.
Mm-hmm. He had all these messages, but it only kind of touched the surface of each one.
Yeah. So it was kind of half-assed in a lot of different directions. Like teens with sexuality, teens with queerness, teens with bullying, teens with identity, teens with surfer lifestyle, man. It's a lifestyle, not an attitude. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying. There's a lot that he had. And to be fair and to be honest, now, I know, Pars, you put a lot of trust in a director. Yes. I don't put as much trust in a director. And here's why. Because studio involvement. Producers get involved. Mm-hmm. Studio heads get involved. And suddenly, it is not the baby that they thought that they had.
Yeah.
And that happens to some of my favorite films, like Event Horizon, to where it could have been a lot better if the studio just shut the fuck up. Let them do what they wanted to do. Let them fail if they fail. Let them succeed if they succeed.
Do you think it's similar with indie films?
I believe so. It could be. I mean, especially during this time, again, there was that push of push white kids, push doing drugs. You did kids. I don't know as a fact.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just speculating. And again, as Court has said before, he does do a lot of teen exploitation. It's in his wheelhouse.
Yes.
But I'm just saying, whenever I go into a movie, I never say, okay, director, this is all on you. Because I know so many times they're like, okay, this is what I want to do. And then some asshole comes in and says, you don't have enough money, or somebody took off with the money, or we don't like the direction, or that didn't test well, or, you know, we want it to be PG-13 now. All these crazy things happen.
Yeah, that's all fine. I understand all that for sure.
Yeah.
But when there are films that kind of break through that, those are the ones that, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say, I guess.
I think for you, this film did break through that. And for me, it did not. And I think, I don't know if it's from experiences. I don't know if it's just, I'm not sure, because I really tried to watch it again. Mm-hmm. And I got to the making out with the dog scene, like when he's kissing his dog and then it's dog cam, and I hated dog cam.
I forgot all about that.
Oh, I know. And then that was when I was like, fuck you, dog cam. And then I was kind of like scrolling through it a little bit, and then I'm like, I can't do this again. And you watched it 9 times and you read the book So I mean, there's just, and but here's the thing too about it is that, again, it's opened up such a huge dialogue. Mm-hmm. So there is that too, that's something of merit that we can say about this film. As much as I don't like this film, I can say it gives me an emotion. And that's better than half the blockbusters that I watch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not one that I just kind of like watch and then just like, I'm like, okay, that sucked, and then just like hate it and then forget about it. But I actually like have to like, you know, I can't like pinpoint directly what I think is wrong with it. I have to kind of like look deeper into it. And that's what I like appreciate that at least, because it's like nice to actually have something to, it's like nice to have something to think about right now. And so this was good.
Yeah, it's kind of, we've, I think, all kind of obsessed about it for a while.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wrote this quote down. It's this Irish British painter who did like raw imagery, Francis Bacon. The job of the artist is always to deepen the mystery. And I thought that went really well with this.
Again, man, I think it's just, it didn't click with me. And I'm not saying that it, I don't know. Court, what are your notes? I want to know about your notes. You've been so quiet this whole week. Like, me and Parza have been going back and forth and back and forth. And even Dr. Joe's like, hey, everything cool? I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. Everything's fine. We're just talking about Bully. He's like, should I watch this? I'm like, you ask Par. She'll say, I'll say no. It's up to you, man. So I want to hear your thoughts, Court.
So I wrote down like all the various messages that the movie was trying to send. And so they kind of wanted to address young adult sexuality, mental illness, domestic violence, and white like suburban punk surfer / skater culture of the 90s. And then also rap's influence on white people. And then how like youths don't really like think through all their behavior. And the one that I had the biggest length of notes on is also with the music, but also with the domestic violence, because it showed, so it showed like a lot of different types of domestic violence, like between like Bobby and Marty, and then between like Marty and Lisa. And the one with, I don't know, they really were just, it was just really like with Marty, at least they like kind of showed how and like why he was still in this friendship with Bobby, you know, because it was like Bobby was really manipulative and abusive and just threatening to him, and they've known each other forever. But when Marty like bruised Lisa really badly, and then her mom found out and she's like, oh, I'm gonna kill him. And then Lisa's like, but I love him. And it just kind of like left it at that, and then they just kept starting to turn around, and she wanted to kill Bobby, and then they were like, okay, this is all her fault again. And I don't know, it didn't really address how like why she was still in this relationship with Marty. It was more just like, oh, it's kind of her fault, she should just leave when she can. But and I mean, I just hate when they do that, because it's like so much more complicated than that. But yeah, it just didn't really like portray that as well as I wish it would have.
I think the book did help with that then, just the little that Pars did read.
Yeah.
Because it does put it in the perspective of both of them suffer from very low self-esteem.
Yeah.
And are very easily to be manipulated. And again, are both in a toxic relationship. Marty just kind of mirroring what he has always known through Bobby. Mm-hmm. With Lisa's her name, okay. Pregnant one. And you know, that is her only solution to that is more violence. You know, violence begetting violence. I'm surprised that we didn't see or find out that maybe Lisa has also, like, maybe her mom had suffered domestic abuse or something like that, to where it kind of links that together. But yeah, with what Pars read, it made it a little bit clearer. But that was a very short scene.
Yeah.
Amazingly short scene when they're together and she's like, let's kill him. And he's like, what? No? Okay, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, then he stuck his tongue in her mouth and that was that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kind of blew me away, because again, for him to, I don't know, have that sort of resilience of, yeah, you're right, like, I think it would have to have a lot more talk up.
Right, yeah.
Just, here's my vagina, let
us. Unless he was already thinking about it.
Yeah, they just didn't make that clear, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. but I didn't see that before.
Yeah.
And it was never clear that he raped her either.
No, it was not.
No, because he punched him and then that was it. I honestly thought that he raped Marty, but then later she's like, he raped me. And I was like, oh, so that's what happened, which was weird because they didn't show that, but then they showed. So is she a reliable narrative? We don't know.
Right. Yeah.
He didn't.
Because if they had shown him raping Allie, then maybe it would make, yeah, you know.
But he, like, they showed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty clear and apparent.
And then, like, just the way she said it, too, it was just kind of, like, brushed off. Which, I mean, that's, like, very a normal response. But also just, like, the movie didn't really go into that any deeper, either.
The rape of Allie?
Right.
Of Lisa.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh.
Everybody was being raped.
So. Yeah. Sorry.
Great. Everybody's raping everybody. But yeah, no, it didn't really go into that, which makes it almost kind of more of, is she a reliable narrator?
Mm-hmm.
And, but no, they didn't go into the Allie one either. And that's why I was kind of, I thought she did that for Allie to get raped. I didn't understand that.
Oh, yeah.
Because for some reason it was like, no, he didn't, you know, like, I don't know, it was just
so I took
a strange reaction. Yeah, tell me Pars, what you think. Yeah.
I took that as she was more focused on, like, she was
because that was just a weird, awkward exchange, because she knew how, because at that point she knew how vile Bobby was.
Yeah.
So why even put her friend in that situation except
okay, yeah, so they weren't really friends though. So no, so in the beginning, you know, when they were walking into the sub shop, mm-hmm. Allie was the dominant one of the relationship, which we can get into dominance in a little bit if you want. Mm-hmm. But Allie was the dominant one in the relationship between the two. So, I mean, I'm sorry. They were friends. You're right. They were friends, but they weren't on
equal footing.
Right. So right. Allie was the dominant one. And then when Lisa started having relationships with Marty, her confidence went up.
So okay, she had her friend raped?
So, no. So she was mostly, her mind was all about Marty. And then she got those two together and then thinking it was going to be fine. Yeah, I'm not saying she's a great human being, but she was more annoyed that it didn't work out.
Okay.
She was annoyed.
Okay.
Did that happen before or after she and Marty decided to kill him?
Oh, that was
before.
Yeah, okay.
That was before, because was what she used as leverage as,
yes,
right,
he raped you, he needs to die.
In the Pizza Hut, yeah.
And she's like, oh, yeah, you're right, I guess.
So it does kind of sound like, though, she kind of had, like, an idea that he would do that to her, to, well, like, kind of...
Especially because people kept saying, he's rough, he's this, he's that. And there's a difference between, because, like you said, Allie is the dominant one. She's the dominant one. We see that later when she's with Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's always, like, twisting his nipples and pouring candle wax on him and shit like that. And for her to... I don't think she's so stupid as to be like, oh, two dominant people together, like, especially one being abusive, that's gonna work out great. I think it was a setup in some way. I think, I can't remember exactly, but I remember, I think in the scene she did keep looking over at them to see how it was going, because that was also the fuck the police scene where also Eminem was the only rapper shown.
Mm-hmm. Because of course he was.
I'm sorry. I'm still. Okay. I'm good. We're good. Okay. So I want to talk about, because I really want to get your feelings on this, because again, since we've all been obsessing about this, I want to talk about this shot, because there is, I don't know why this shot is in there, because there's no reaction shot from other people. It is for us, the viewer, to see. And that is the shot when Allie goes into the pedicure place, and she's going to go get her toes done. And she goes and puts her feet down, and that's when she gets the call from Pregnant One. That's when Lisa says, we're going to kill him. And she's like, what? No. Oh, okay. But we are shown a shaved beaver shot. And again, that is just for the viewer. We don't get like a reaction mm-hmm. shot from the person doing the nails. We don't, mm-hmm. nothing. And it's like close up right there.
Mm-hmm.
Fatal Attraction kind of shit going on.
So many crotch shots.
Well, yeah, but that specifically.
Yeah.
In a non-sexual area in, and again, I guess just for what benefit or for what purpose? Because it's not like the nail lady sees it and is like, oh, that's a bad teen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's for us, the audience. Because very soon after that, too, we get a really prominent butt shot
mm-hmm.
of Allie just walking along and it's just her ass. But I mean, that's okay. I'll take whatever. But this, I was like, this is so purposeful. Like, you had to go to the actress and be like, can you shave your crotch for this shot? Can we shoot this shot? All right, let's do lighting. Okay, the lighting's not good. Let's do the shot again. All right, cross your legs from right to left. Okay, now left to right. Let me see. You know, there was effort put into this.
Yeah.
Talk to me about this.
Yeah, so that would go along partly with what I read earlier, the author using specific wording.
Okay.
to sexualize these young people. That would kind of go along with that as... To push the theme of sexuality, and that sexuality is on the minds of these people, of these characters, or sex or eroticism, you know, having sex, the idea of sex is on the minds of these characters, and it also may be a reach out from the director to have the viewer. Because I feel like the audience should be white parents. It reaches into the viewer's head to, because we're already retrospecting, to confront or to stir thoughts of our own thoughts on this issue.
Okay.
I made that really confusing.
No, I think you did. I think you're saying it's as like a warning to the viewer, to the white parents. But to me, it kind of plays off as a titillation to the viewer, again, as like kind of like exploitation, sexploitation
mm-hmm.
of teens. Like, look at this teen with her shaved beaver.
I didn't get that at all. I didn't get it at all. I did not feel offended by that at all. I don't know.
Well, I'm not saying I was offended. I was just saying,
it served no purpose really to the rest of the story. It was just, I don't know. It was like very male gazy kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think that is the words that I was looking for.
Well, in his movie Kids, the way that he would like move the camera around, it was as if the camera was, or the viewer was another character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and and I can see that as a part of filmmaking. But when you're doing sexual exploitation of young people, that tends to be, I guess, a little bit sticky. And I guess that's when, and I don't want to come off as a prude. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a grandma. sex for marriage, kids. But it does seem these are, I guess it rubs me in that way of, these are sexy teens doing sexy things. Look at them as they are sexy, instead of, I am a girl who is uncomfortable with my body. There's a juxtaposition. There's like a cognitive dissonance that just isn't there, that I don't see,
mm-hmm.
I guess, is what is part of the problem that I have when I watch this, is like, I don't see that other side to this. I just see, look at these beautiful bodies doing these beautiful things without really any, I don't know, consequence, except for the consequence that they make themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, and that's more like, I think has to do with his style, his artistic choice and his signature.
And that's probably true.
And I understand that that's not like socially acceptable behavior, to look at teens this way, to film teens this way.
Well, I did watch because you gifted me. I watched Nymphomaniac, parts one and two. And I felt like, and again, my relationship with Lars Von Trier is fine. It's rocky sometimes. Sometimes he comes over and he hangs out a little bit too long, if you get my drift. But for the most part, how it was framed, how it was pictured, how there was consequence to, I don't know, it just, there was character to it. Now, of course, he had like two fucking movies to work with. But even the first half of it, it was like there was something that drew you into the character. And it's, to me, it's, I think, even more of kind of a travesty because these are real kids.
Yeah.
And to me, they just, how the director show them, it just looked like plastic models. Like these are your Devon Sawas. No offense to Devon Sawa, he's a good actor, but I mean, these are the hunks, the heartthrobs, the, you know, that are shaving their pussies and doing the drugs and listening to the hip hops, and then they're like, let's kill a guy, and they're like, okay, and then they play the video games.
Yeah, no, I get it. I don't think you should show this to kids.
Well, I don't think you should show it to parents either, because I don't think it's well, it yes, there are elements that it did happen. I don't think, again, I think this is just like a part of a very small slice of a geode of a time that was kind of, was so small and narrowed.
Well, a lot of people do that. A lot of artists do that. Slice of life stories?
Well, no. I mean, I'm not talking about like a slice of life. That's fine. I'm just saying, no, like the genre of it, like the white kids doing bad things genre. Mm-hmm. Like it's so narrow at that time. I don't think parents should watch this and be like, this is what's going to happen to my child. Because
well, no. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay. Sorry. I misinterpreted. Do you want to slap me?
No. I'm trying to figure out how to reword.
Do you want to end it for this time? And we'll come back to part three?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're going to break now. So this is end of part two. Part two. Part three coming up. Three of three. End of the trilogy. Way better than The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings. Shots fired. Thank you, Court. Do you have anything that you would like to plug?
No, not at the moment. I'm okay.
Okay. Percival, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
No.
Do you want to say the names of the books again that you read for this?
Bully, A True Story of High School Revenge by Jim Schutze. It's S-C-H-U-T-Z-E. I also did reread Columbine by Dave Cullen. Everything I Never Told You by Celeste N.G. Ng, I think is how you pronounce it. I also watched What's Up Rockers, Larry Clark's, I believe it's his freshest film, and then Climax, which is also on Prime.
Very good. And kids too. I mean, yes. You went through the everything. You went through the Larry Clark, not trilogy, but
discography.
Discography. Yeah, filmography. All right. What
words mean right now.
Words mean words sometimes. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We hope that you join us next time for part three, and we will see you then.